This week on Technotopia, we're talking to Jameson Lopp, a Bitcoin programmer. This is Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Welcome to Technotopia. I'm John Biggs, and today we have Jameson Lopp. He's a Bitcoin enthusiast and programmer, and you're going to tell us about the future of blockchain and how things are going to be amazing, right?
I sure hope so.
Okay, so as you may not know, we're focused primarily on how things are not going to suck in the future. So if there's any if there's anything that you think is going to suck, you might as well talk about it now. That way we can get out of the way.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of us who are in the Bitcoin and blockchain space who got into it earlier did so, you know, for philosophical and ideological reasons. And so there are a lot of great ambitions of what we think that this technology can allow us to accomplish. It's been really interesting over the past couple of years, you know, seeing how some of the different viewpoints of people in the system have caused us to butt heads. And I guess the long story short is I think that there's always going to be politics regardless of what the technology is.
Okay, so well, let's start out a little bit more slowly. So let's talk a little bit about blockchain generally as a tool, because let's assume that the audience has heard about it, but they don't quite understand what's going on. So what are we talking about right now?
Sure. So the blockchain is basically a new type of data structure or database, if you will, which is a way for us to have a new type of ledger that lets you keep track of things, to be as generic as possible. Mm-hmm. And the real difference with the blockchain versus any of the ledgers that have been used for, you know, throughout human history is that now we have a way for it to be immutable and basically provably unchangeable once the entries are written into the ledger. And then the system itself that Satoshi, this anonymous individual, created with Bitcoin has a number of other properties that allow us to make changes to this ledger in a trustless fashion, such that we don't have to trust anyone to be honest within the system. Mm-hmm. And you got a lot of interesting properties, many of which were initially used to help create this currency that we call Bitcoin. But now, over the past few years, just a lot of other people throughout financial industries and many other industries are starting to realize that some of the properties of this type of new ledger can be leveraged within their own needs to do more efficient things or just do completely new things that have never been possible before.
Okay, so What does this mean to us as folks who will be living in the future, who will be dealing with this sort of ledger in the future? So it seems to me that we're talking about a new way to store data plus a new way to pass value. What are we thinking about here?
Certainly, I mean, the major things that it comes down to is it's a new type of trust model. It's a new way of allowing people to interact economically. So much like the way that the internet has completely revolutionized human communication over the past few decades, blockchain systems are going to revolutionize human economic interaction. And that can be something as simple as making payments, or it can be more complex and moving other type of value and assets and their ownership around. And then we're getting even more complex these days on the cutting edge of this type of system with what we're calling smart contracts, which basically allow you to do almost anything that you can program a computer to do. So the possibilities seem to be becoming endless.
Okay. So the the contracts themselves are going to be able to run a program at the same time, or what's the and I'm trying to simplify this for a layperson.
Sure. So the fancy word for what these type of systems really allow is disintermediation. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about any type of economic interaction where you have an asset like a house or a car or, you know, something that is officially owned by you, you know, according to the legal system in your area, whenever you want to transfer ownership of that asset, you have to use trusted intermediaries, and that might involve banks, it might involve notaries, it might involve different type of government agencies and people working there that, you know, they're in charge of updating all of these official records. And so the point of these blockchain systems is that if we can get rid of the need for those human trusted intermediaries and instead allow us to automate them with code and with these new type of databases, then that's going to save everybody a lot of time and money, because you won't have to, you know, physically make an appointment, physically go somewhere, you know, physically wait in line. Instead, you know, you can just have all of that logic automated and done by the computer in, you know, hopefully a few keyboard strokes or a few mouse clicks.
Okay, so we're talking about you don't have to go to the DMV and part of the I guess the modern bureaucracy, and I think this has been discussed before, but the idea of that the educational system was built around the idea that you can recreate a modern bureaucracy anywhere in the world through our educational system, right? So you know how to do, you know how to do long division, you know how to do certain things, you know how to write contracts, etc. And you can send somebody to, I don't know, the strangest place in the world, and they can set up a little outpost of your country. So, and this is how colonialism happened and all this other good stuff. We can get in a little more deeper if you want. But it seems what you're saying is that you don't need that person anymore. You don't need this, you don't need to send culture, through the world, through education. You can actually send a robot. You can send a system that will do the trust and do the system of trust that allows the home office, I guess you could say, to say, yeah, this is a accurate and this is a correct process, and this has been processed correctly, right?
Exactly. I mean, these are new types of protocols, and protocols are rules. And, you know, if you think about it, laws and the whole legal system is just a bunch of rules. And the main difference is, you know, who is the adjudicator or who has the final say to make sure that the rules are being followed. So now, instead of having, you know, laws that are purely, you know, created by politicians and enforced by courts and law enforcement, mm-hmm. we instead have a new type of system where the base level rules are created by the programmers that are making the lower level system, but then on top of that, anyone who's using the system can create their own set of rules and try to get other people to agree upon them. And if this is the sort of voluntarist perspective of, if we can then allow people to enter into voluntary exchange and economic interaction and allow for them to have adjudication of whatever agreements that they come to between two or more people, then we can really allow the global economy to blossom and cut down on a lot of, you know, cross-border issues and cross-jurisdictional issues.
Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen? So we did a lot of talk about blockchain. Is can blockchain be separated out from the idea of a Bitcoin, the idea of a piece of value, right?
Certainly. Though there are plenty of purists who would argue from a security standpoint, you need to be paying whoever is securing the system. But we're going to see all kinds of different models. And these basically come down to different trust models. And you're going to see banks that are creating their own private distributed ledgers. We're also seeing open projects like the Linux Foundation and their Hyperledger project creating more open distributed ledgers. Mm-hmm. But these are These are distributed databases that may or may not be blockchains. They may be private, they may be public, they may be permissioned, they may be permissionless. There are many different models, and you know, we're just going to have to wait and you know, let the market figure out which models work best for which purposes.
Okay. So, and what are you betting on? What do you think you're going to be? Are we going to have the galactic credits?
Well, the real question these days is whether or not Bitcoin will maintain its sort of superiority that it's had over the years. Those of us who are more Bitcoin maximalists are hoping that we're going to see many, many blockchains appear, but that they will still be linked cryptographically, and thus their value will be linked back to Bitcoin. So there's an argument that Bitcoin will remain the most secure chain simply because it has the most computational power securing it. And then there are a number of different cryptographic tricks that you can use to create other systems that can leverage that security without actually having to use the Bitcoin blockchain itself, or at least not as often.
Okay. Interesting. So what is the world going to look like in 25 years, bottom line? So using these technologies, even if you wanted to get into flying cars, et cetera, just what do you think we're going to be seeing?
So one thing that I'm not sure about is whether or not humans will actually end up using Bitcoin as a mainstream thing. We're certainly dealing with a lot of, you know, user interface and educational issues on that side. But I think that Bitcoin as a protocol, and thus as a sort of machine-to-machine communication layer, is going to allow for a lot of new things, especially when you get into some of the more crazy futuristic ideas such as smart property and digital autonomous corporations. And so if you understand that now we have a system of currency or value or assets that are purely digital and yet are still secured and don't require humans to actually move them around, then you realize that computers can now own things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be possible, for example, for you to have, say, a taxi service. And the taxi service is just a piece of software that's running out in the cloud or the internet or what have you. And it is managing the deployment of autonomous taxi cabs. And, you know, it takes care of the scheduling. It takes care of everything that humans would currently take care of with taxis. And the taxis will go around, pick up their fares, collect their money in Bitcoin or whatever other cryptocurrency. And then when they need, you know, to recharge or refuel or get maintenance, they'll drive themselves to a maintenance area or, you know, call for a tow truck. And it'll all be paying for itself, this entirely self-enclosed ecosystem slash autonomous organization. So that's the sort of type of efficiency that we can expect to see from this type of system. Getting rid of humans.
Yeah, that's what's confusing. Are the robots going to be? That you're saying the robots are paying themselves. But why do the robots have to pay themselves at all?
Yeah, what? Purely for maintenance, right? And so, of course, if there's a human that initially set up this organization, then they'll want to skim some profits off the top as well. But the idea being that in general, the cost should be much lower. The more humans you can get rid of, the more you can automate stuff, that should lower your costs more and more, and hopefully benefit everyone by, you know, lowering the cost for the fare and increasing competition in general.
And what happens for the poor people who are fixing cars and doing all that stuff?
Yeah, this is the perennial Luddite problem that we get into of you know, robots going to take our jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about the Luddites is that they were wrong, but they were also right. If I recall correctly, Luddites were mostly like farmers and other blue-collar workers, and I think that a lot of their jobs were automated away. But then you realize that that creates additional jobs just in higher skilled areas.
Okay.
So if the job of actually driving a car around goes away, you're still going to have a need for people that are improving upon the system that has replaced it. And so, you know, computer systems are never perfect, or we're never done building software and hardware and automating things. There's always a way to make it better.
Okay, so the assumption is that things are going to be improved by all this stuff. But I think the other argument, and I don't want to get too deep into the negative here, but I think the other argument is that we are in a position that the improvements that are associated with this are so minor that we can't completely bring in an entirely new workforce to replace the one that we're destroying. So imagine, like, so you had going from buggies to cars, for example. That was a big deal, because you could teach the people who drove buggies around, and they could get more done, and then they could move faster, and they could be more productive. Whereas moving from you're basically destroying an entire world, especially if you have robots replacing the guys who are driving the cars.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like either you're a pessimist or an optimist, right? Okay. And you know, I can't predict the future, and I don't know, whenever we start talking about, you know, how do you control the economy? Well, I'm not so sure that we're really supposed to control the economy.
Okay.
Though I have seen a number of you know, interesting proposals. I'm hearing more people talking about universal basic income these days, and I think it's kind of revolving around that same issue of, well, if we're creating so much wealth with, you know, automating things, then surely, you know, some of that can be put back into, you know, helping the humans who are displaced by it, or you know, trying to re-educate them and get them other skills for the modern age.
Okay, so it's not gonna be horrible, right?
I think that we're gonna survive. I think it's gonna be fine. I mean, I don't recall hearing, you know, like Great Depression type stories, you know, from the Luddite area. I think that all worked out fine, and that, you know, the same type of cycle will continue. Okay. And that, yes, you know, some people will lose their jobs and it'll hurt, but that can happen for any number of reasons. You know, economies have natural cycles. That's just the way that things are.
Okay. So are we gonna be paying with Bitcoin at the coffee shop anytime soon?
I'm still pretty skeptical about that. We've got so many scaling issues and usability issues and security issues that at this point in time, I think that Bitcoin is really better as a machine type protocol than as a day-to-day, you know, retail transaction.
Hmm. Okay, but what about? And this is a little self-serving, but what are you thinking about in terms of less speedy transactions, less like credit card transactions, but more like sending money to friends for kicks, that kind of thing.
Right. I mean, there are so many different properties that this system has that it makes it usable for a number of different things. And if you have a need, for example, to move money cross borders, and your only existing option is something like wire transfer, or, you know, going through, you know, series of bank like ACH systems, then Bitcoin is by far superior, because we're talking, you know, the order of 10, 20, 30 minutes versus 3 to 5 business days, sure, if not longer. And so it certainly excels in that area. I don't at the moment see it excelling at you know, going into a store and making a retail purchase. And I've tried to make a number of retail purchases with a variety of Bitcoin software and hardware wallets over the past few years, and I still encounter a lot of issues. So it's still pretty clunky. Though you could argue, you know, credit cards were pretty clunky when they first came out.
Sure.
So, you know, we're still in the early days with this, and we're trying to make it better. And I've got a number of things I think that are bright in our future that probably won't really be ready for another year or several years. For example, the Lightning Network is something I think is really interesting, but they're still, you know, highly developing it. But it has a lot of potential, and there's so many different ways that this could go. I don't know what the final form of Bitcoin will be, but I think as long as it remains strong and keeps its history of being censorship resistant. And decentralized, and that's the most important thing. And then we can try to build these other features like scalability and you know, faster throughput, faster confirmation, and the ability to do micropayments easier.
All right, so we should all be bullish on Bitcoin, right?
I certainly am.
As a future technology. All right, very cool. So Jameson, where can people find out a little bit more about what you're working on?
So I'm a software engineer at BitGo. It's BITGO.com. We're a multi-signature wallet. We power a lot of the Bitcoin exchanges. I do the occasional blog post on Coindesk.com. And I'm an avid tweeter, and my Twitter handle is LOPP, L-O-P-P.
All right, pretty cool. All right, thank you very much. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.
Thanks.